Don't be alarmed. The quasi-shimmering light before you is a trans-dimensional gateway to other worlds, other voices, other thoughts, and other realities. Up feels like down, and down feels like the number 7 on a Wednesday morning. Don't worry. That quivering, blood-boiling sensation under your eyebrows is all a part of the charm. Welcome to the PCC Multiverse.
Pop Culture Cosmos, Gerald Glassford, thanks again for watching this. I truly appreciate it. My good friend returns because he is fascinated by all the comings and goings when it comes to X-Men 97. Has it brought back nostalgia for him? Because I know it has for a lot of people. All the things that are going on, and of course through episode 5, as we were talking here, a lot of changes, deaths, but then again, no one ever dies in the comic books, really. Even when they say they die, they don't die. It is, of course, my good friend, indeed. It is the great one himself, TJ Johnson. TJ, always good to have you here. Oh, I should say always great to have you here. I know you wanted to talk a lot about X-Men 97, my friend, so I will give the floor to you. I've been watching it, but I'm not invested in it, if that makes sense, because let me put it to you like this. The real Ghostbusters.
Okay.
That's something I am more invested in because that was closer to my age when I was a kid. Yeah. So I did go home after school and watch it. Plus the storytelling on that show was awesome. I know people would talk about the early 90s Batman shows.
Yes.
And how definitive that was. That was for a lot of kids growing up. That was the show out there on weekday afternoons. And then later on in that decade, the same thing can be said for a lot of kids when they watch X-Men 97 and the X-Men series leading into that X-Men 97. So we flash forward decades later and we have the revival of X-Men 97. And I know Marvel gets a lot of heat for doing a lot of things wrong in the past 2 years, 3 years. But I will say this, the great one. This is probably one of the best things that they've done to date. Not only treating it like the property that it has been, but going forward with a property that I think it can be for Disney Plus.
Well, look, first, Gerald, thank you so much for allowing me on the show once again. Absolutely appreciative of every opportunity I get to be on the Pop Culture Cosmos. And yes, X-Men 97 is an absolute love letter to the original X-Men series from the 90s. And I get it. It's a generational thing. You know, me being an 80s baby, I'm dating myself now, but me being a mid-80s baby, not really being able to comprehend too much until you get into the 90s. And so this was right up my wheelhouse between X-Men, Spider-Man, the animated series, Batman, the animated series. This is quintessential television for me. So when I heard about the revival, I had mixed emotions in regards to it for a number of different reasons. First and foremost, I had such fond memories of it, and Marvel, unfortunately, has had such a spotty track record post Endgame that I really just, I don't know, I wasn't sold. And then looking at some of the old animations that they've done, I mean, the What If series notwithstanding, but just looking at some of the older Marvel animated DVDs that they had put out, but, you know, adventures of like Iron Man and the Hulk, where it just felt weird and off and it just didn't do it. They weren't nearly the caliber of what DC's animation had been. So that was my concern. I can definitively tell you that those concerns were unfounded because X-Men 97 is a rousing, if not even more success. The creator or the director of this season clearly was a fan, clearly understands the X-Men mythos and understands what the X-Men represented, what they continue to represent.
Before they fired him.
Before they fired him, and I don't know what happened. I don't know if we ever will know. I'm sure that there was some type of non-disclosure agreement, NDA signed.
You could just say non-Disney thing that Disney probably didn't
like. It was
like
an NDA non-Disney agreement. But I'm sure that there was something signed, so we won't know what happen there until about, 10, 15 years once that NDA expires. But regardless of what happened in regards to that, I can tell you definitively that this guy clearly had an affinity for this property, this franchise, this universe, and it shows in everything that he's done. First and foremost, if you go into like the first two episodes, they did something that no other X-Men to date has been able to do, and that was make Cyclops look completely like a boss. I mean, just his intro alone was better than anything that Fox has done over the last decade, 20 years with the X-Men property. It was insane. I actually found myself like, oh my goodness, Cyclops is really, he really looks like he deserves to be the leader of the X-Men, and he acts like the leader of the X-Men. Like this is what I always imagined Cyclops should be from reading the comics. Definitely nothing like what he was in the movies. So that was like the first two episodes, and then all of a sudden these different storylines that they're now going into, the entire Madeline Pryor thing, and a lot of people didn't know who Madeline Pryor was. I shouldn't say a lot. Core X-Men fans or fans that have read the comics knew who she was, but your general audience had no idea. And then little nuances that they would show and like the intros and how those tend to change from week to week, and how before the Jean Grey that had her hair down, you could tell it was really Madeline Pryor. And then all of a sudden when they had the real Jean Grey back, her hair was up. It's little nuances that you can really feel like the creators have a true love and a true appreciation and a great attention to detail in regards to these characters in this world. I could go on and on about what happened in episode 5. I'm pretty sure it's been talked about to death by a lot of different people. What I will say about it is, I don't think I was prepared. I went through the first 15 minutes of that episode thinking it was a good episode, but it wasn't leaps and bounds better than what they had already put out. And in fact, up to that point, I still thought episodes 1 through 3 were their stronger ones. 4 was probably a bit more of a filler episode as far as I was concerned. And 5 was kind of going into that filler category as well. And then it all went down. It all went left. And I was not prepared. I was not prepared emotionally for how that was, that last line that Rogue uttered, how reminiscent it was of the line that Wanda Maximoff, or the Scarlet Witch, if you want to call her that, had uttered when she couldn't feel Vision. She said, I can't feel you. And to hear Rogue utter that exact same line, and for the way it faded to black, and just it was very, I just didn't expect to have such a visceral response to that. I didn't expect to be so caught off guard by how that ended and all the things that happened in that episode. It was great television. I mean, this was Game of Thrones level of excitement and Game of Thrones level of interest and intrigue. And I mean, I didn't see the swerve coming so soon, considering the fact that we just got to Genosha. Again, if you're familiar with the comics, you knew that there was a massacre coming. But you just didn't expect it. I just didn't expect it so soon, considering the fact that we literally had just got there. Now I know that there's time passes in between here, and we don't know exactly how long it had been. It sounds like it had been months, so we're not exactly sure. But when you see the Watcher show up, stuff's about to get real and it's about to go down. And again, a nice subtle little nod to everything that Marvel's been doing. And I'm telling you, the guys that put this together, the guys and gals, excuse me, really, really have a love of the property and have a love of Marvel in general, because the attention to detail is just spot on. It's pretty incredible.
Once again, I'm on with TJ Johnson, always a great part of what we do here at the Pop Culture Cosmos, the great one himself. As he followed WrestleMania with his great thoughts
Woo!
There. I know
Yes,
he
man.
was really enjoyed it. Actually, it was a very good weekend for the WWE, and yeah,
Yeah.
absolutely. Just some great thoughts there. But I want to hear your thoughts a little bit more on X-Men 97. Again, this to me,
Yeah.
and this is for someone who does not have the emotional attachment of X-Men 97 that others do, like you. I'm seeing this from the outside, taking a step back and looking at this and seeing, you know what? they really did a nice job. They could have really blown it and could have really done something that was like bad.
Yeah.
And made it even worse for themselves in regards to repairing what's going on with the MCU. But in some small way, I think X-Men 97, after the debacle known as the Marvels, I mean, I liked What If Season 2, but I know nobody has seen What If Season 2, so I may be the only one. You and I may be the only like five people on the planet that has seen them. Yeah. But with Echo starting off the year to I think this is the first step. This leading into Deadpool could be the first step in repairing what we know of the MCU.
You know, I would agree, except I think it's reversed. I think the Deadpool trailer that dropped during Super Bowl was the real first step.
Okay, well, I'll give you that. But I'm seeing the whole thing as a whole.
I get it. Yeah, I know. I understand what you're saying. I just from me as the consumer, that was the first thing in a long time that got me like, oh crap, I got to see this. Like, and I we've talked about how, you know, as our tastes have changed and how we've consumed media has changed, the way we want to go to the theater and experience certain things has changed as well. I will be in the theater for Wolverine and Deadpool, or Deadpool and Wolverine. I can assure you that the only way I want to see that first is in the theater with a big tub of popcorn and the system blaring louder than it needs to be blaring. Like that's an experience.
Oh,
that's
I'll tell you, my friend, at CinemaCon, Kevin Feige talked a lot about the popcorn bucket, especially in relation to Deadpool, and you know, threw a subtle reference at the very viral Dune Part 2 popcorn bucket, and I'll just leave it at that. So
yeah, I think that's probably fair. This is a family show, Gerald. But that's the way I want to experience this. And these are the type of movie going experiences that will bring people to a movie theater, that will bring people out and say, okay, this is the way I want to consume this media. This is how I want to experience this. Of course, you're going to have people that still want to stay home, and that's their prerogative. I get it. However, this is the experience that would get me back into the theater. Once that trailer dropped, I was hooked. And then again, after seeing those first two hits of X-Men 97 and seeing the justice that they've done to not only these characters, but the property in general, I was thoroughly impressed. I've heard rumblings now that even Robert Downey Jr. has not closed the door on a return to the MCU, even though Kevin Feige is.
Yep. He said if it needs to be, and call, he would actually welcome a return to the MCU.
Yeah. I mean, after a couple flops, I know he's come back with Oppenheimer. But I know that, you know, Doolittle wasn't exactly what he expected it to be and some other things.
But Oppenheimer has worked out for him.
Oppenheimer definitely has worked out for him, definitely. But, you know, it's hard to turn down that Disney money, I'm sure.
I think, well, if you're Disney...
My point in saying all that is... You think of what?
I think Disney might say something about that kind of money. That's the only thing, is the price tag that comes along with bringing Robert Downey back.
Yeah,
Kevin says, yeah, let's do it. Then Bob Iger says, oh, hold on a second here. How much does he want?
Right.
For how little screen time?
Exactly. I hear you. But you know what? If you're going to get the people to come back to the theaters and come back and spend the money, again, Marvel needs some more wins. Now they've got a nice thing going right now. You don't want to mess this up. So if Robert Downey Jr. says he'll come back, you pay that money. You pay it happily. You give it to him. But yes, I'm extremely excited for what the future of Marvel can look like. And I think that there was so much that they were trying to put out there. They were trying to get so many properties reestablished, understanding that the core Avengers were, you know, moving on to other projects, or the actors and actresses who were doing the Avengers moving on to other projects, and trying to introduce so many other things and worried about continuity. And it got so big, and Kevin Feige can only do so much. Then you have to try to figure out a way to work in all the Fox properties. So now you've got the X-Men, you've got Deadpool, you've got a pivot after, you know, the passing of Chadwick Boseman, who was going to be an integral part of the Avengers, and you have to pivot now from Jonathan Majors and his Kang character or try to figure out a way to work around that. There were so many things that were thrown at them that they had to kind of readjust from, that it's very easy to get lost in the sauce, so to speak, and trying to figure out how to work through the minutia of that. So I've been on record on this show saying that we owe Kevin Feige the opportunity to fix it. We owe Kevin Feige the opportunity to right the ship. And I feel like he's heeding all that. Not that he listened to the show. He might not have listened to the show. I don't know. But I feel like he's truly showing that, hey, you know, I understand. I hear you guys. And we're figuring this out. We just need you to bear with us, you know, while we reassess. And, you know, I know Bob Iger was very, very big on kind of trimming the fat and getting back to quality over quantity, which I can appreciate. It's going to be fun. It's going to be fun to see. But X-Men 97 has been outstanding. I'm a little nervous because the director did go on to say that episode 5 is a warm-up to episodes 8 through 10. I'm going to be honest with you. I don't know if I can handle. I don't know how much more of that I can handle. That was intense. I'm really curious to see how they move this going forward. I've got some ideas on what I think is going to happen. But I'll hold on to those and see if they actually come into fruition. But I've got a couple ideas. I feel a return of a very different Eric Lyncher very, very soon.
For the latest news and information, analysis and opinions on the Los Angeles Lakers and the NBA, check out the Lakers Fast Break podcast today on wherever you get your podcasts. Before we finish out this conversation, there was a major death, which I won't elaborate into, but you know who that was at the episode 5.
Yep.
As I said before, there's no real deaths in comic books. So are you expecting that character that passed away in episode 5 to be returning at some time point? At some point sometime soon?
You know, I don't know, and here's why. I think it's really, I understand the concept of comic book characters never really die. I get that concept, but I think that their deaths have to have meaning when it does happen. And I think you're going to really cheapen it if you bring him back so soon. So I don't see, I see his death being held for some time. Is it going to be held forever? There's nothing that there's no forever, right? There's no such thing in the comic book world as forever. But I think that they would be doing that entire thing a complete disservice if they were to find a way to resurrect him in the next episode. I think you're going to see a very, very big change in personality for a lot of the X-Men moving forward. Cyclops is going to be one of the main ones. He's already started to show some cracks, and we're already starting to see a bit of his villain arc, if you will. And you know, for our comic book readers out there, the pop culture cosmos, they know what's coming with his villain arc and how he kind of turns a little bit. And I'm interested to see how this affects I know we don't want to get into spoilers, even though the episode was out for like 3 or 4 days now, so we should be able to talk about it. But it's hard to speak about what could be potentially be coming next without addressing what it was. But I'll try to keep it as vague as possible. But seeing the way certain characters react to the events of episode 5 and how their potential alliances, allegiances, temperaments are going to change based off of that, it's going to be really interesting to see. Really, really interesting to see.
Absolutely. So we'll go ahead and keep an eye on it. It is X-Men 97. Great to have you here as always, my friend. Any last thoughts before we head on out?
You know what, man? I'm just grateful to have an opportunity to talk about all things pop culture with my guy at the Pop Culture Cosmos. Thank you for having me, Gerald.
Always, my friend. I know with you, your thoughts on WrestleMania. Just quick
on WrestleMania. Yeah.
Did you you enjoyed it as a whole? I could tell on your social media.
I enjoy it. So what's been fun about WrestleMania, and you know, God bless Paul Levesque and that group at the TKO
group. By the way, did you know you're in the Paul Levesque era? I wasn't sure if that was stressed enough.
Oh, I'm sure it was stressed between Paul Heyman and his induction into the WWE Hall of Fame, which was a class act through and through. I was thoroughly excited and thoroughly pleased with so many things from WrestleMania. Now, was the entire show great? No. There were some areas that needed some love. I really wish Jimmy and Jey Uso had a little bit more meat to their match. Their match is a little bit lackluster.
Should have been in a cage.
It should have been either in a cage or honestly, I feel like there should have been a bit of a better buildup. I don't think that the buildup was done very well for Jimmy and Jey Uso. I think it was kind of last minute considering the fact that they had to pivot with Rock and Roman Reigns to go with Rock and Roman Reigns versus Cody Rhodes and Seth Rollins. I think that that caused a couple different pivots. And I think the Jimmy and Jey rivalry was a casualty of that and the buildup for that rivalry because it really just didn't come across as enough bad blood. It came across as they were, you know, as Jimmy was kind of more poking at Jey and it all seemed very, very expected. There was, it all, you know, we know it's quote unquote scripted, but it felt scripted. And there's a difference between knowing it's scripted and feeling like it's scripted. And it absolutely felt like it was scripted. So it didn't do any real justice for those two individuals. And that's never a good thing. But, you know, there's always time to right the ship. So they can figure that out. But, yes, we are definitely in the Paul Levesque era. I was way thrilled with what The Rock was able to do and how The Rock was able to get with the guys and pivot from what they initially thought they were going to do to what they ended up doing. And I absolutely love the final boss. I didn't know I was going to love it, but I do. I ended up loving the final boss. I love the fact that he was able to take all that and twist it and make it something that was completely unexpected for this Rock 10.0 or this new version of The Rock or however you want to look at it. And I thought the storytelling with Cody was great. I thought the induction of using Seth Rollins and that betrayal from Roman Reigns 10 years ago and Seth turned on the Shield and hit Roman Reigns with the steel chair and, you know, things like Seth saying to Cody, allow me to be your Shield. And then he literally comes out in the Shield getup and the Shield look and causes Roman Reigns to snap and takes his eye off the ball. Like this was storytelling. I remember years and years ago that somebody had once said, that's just a male soap opera, wrestling. Well, it felt like it was some great storytelling going on. There were so many different plot lines that were being paid off. And I was very appreciative of them connecting. This was like almost Avengers Endgame level storytelling with the WWE. It was pretty cool, just from an excitement standpoint. Obviously, it wasn't as elaborate as the Endgame, but it was just exciting. It was fun to see. I'm interested to see how The Rock continues to ingratiate himself back into the WWE. He made it very clear he's not going away. He's riding off the sunset for now, but he's coming back, especially to address Cody Rhodes. And I'm ultimately looking to see how they do this next bloodline rivalry where I feel like The Rock is going to be the new head of the table and Roman Reigns is going to end up being the baby face trying to go against him. And it's going to be Rock's bloodline versus Roman's bloodline, the sky's the limit, man. It's exciting times. The women's division is in great hands. Bayley, that was awesome to see her win the championship. Seeing Rhea Ripley hold on to the belt. I'm such a huge Rhea Ripley fan. It is unbelievable. I think she is an incredible talent. I think she's got the look. She's a beautiful woman. She's got the charisma, the attitude, the physical attributes. I mean, she's a great package all the way around. And keeping the belt on her is a very, very smart move. It's just exciting. It's an exciting time to be a fan of the WWE. It's an exciting time to be a fan of pro wrestling. Pro wrestling is cool once again, as we've heard many, 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 many times.
Yeah. By the way, if you didn't know, Vince McMahon is no longer associated. By the way, Friday he's put up all of his shares in stock in TKO.
Yep,
the parent company. Put it all up for sale. I don't know if anybody's going to buy it, but if they do, that means he'll no longer have any relation to the WWE. Yeah. But if you didn't know it, you could just tell because I said to my good friend Mr. John Orlando for the PVD cast, my fellow co-host on the State of Pro Wrestling, I said to him, you could play a drinking game with the last 10 minutes of WrestleMania. All the times they said professional wrestling. Because that was true. Those were two words you could never say with Vince McMahon.
Yeah, and you know, but there are clearly a lot of things you couldn't say or do with Vince McMahon, especially if you look at the level of storytelling that we've seen recently versus the level of storytelling that we've seen towards the end of the Vince McMahon era, if you will. Vince seemed to be very much of, I know what the people want, even if they don't know it. And the rest of the world, or Paul Levesque, if you will, seems to be very much on the other end of that spectrum, saying we're going to give the people what they want. If the people are asking for it, then we're going to look at it and see how we can figure out a way to deliver that. It's exciting. It's exciting to see that transition. It's exciting to see it being the power being given back to people and them having fun with it. I'm interested to see how the product continues to evolve now that they're going to be going to Netflix over in the next year, and how, you know, we're officially moving on from the PG era, or it seems like we're moving on from the PG era. There's blood again, there's profanity, there's things that weren't really allowed on network television starting to happen. And it's interesting. It's an interesting change of the guard. It's an exciting time because, you know, we didn't have this level of excitement. I know I haven't felt this level of excitement since the Attitude Era, and maybe a little bit after. But this is gonna be fun, man. And I'm happy to see people getting their flowers. Paul Levesque getting his flowers was huge to me. Paul Heyman getting his flowers was huge to me. Seeing Stephanie McMahon back on WWE television. Is someone that I know I personally miss seeing, and I'm excited that she had the opportunity to come back. I'm excited that she had the opportunity to just be a part of WrestleMania. That was very, very cool to see. So it was just, I think this was a very, very big win for the WWE in many, many, many different ways. They have a lot of new stars they have get to introduce and get to see their strengths. I'm looking at Jade Cargill as someone to be a force to be reckoned with, obviously. She's obviously a phenomenal talent, and it's going to be fun to see her start to develop even more and go through the WWE along with Bianca Belair and Naomi as that, you know, that trio. So there's just a lot of really, really positive things coming out of WrestleMania that I'm really looking forward to seeing them and elaborate on, build up, and see if we can create a new set of stars so that, you know, some of these other stars, while they come back and they can have fun, we're not banking on them coming back, because we've got enough stars now to where we can move forward without you guys if we need to. So it's going to be fun.
Going to be fun indeed. And we'll keep abreast of it right here at the Cosmos. But TJ, always great to have you here, my friend. Looks like you made the drive home. Always sounds good when you come home safe and sound to your family, but always
Amen.
Great when you come home here to us here at your pop culture home, the Pop Culture Cosmos, my friend.
Amen, brother. Thank you for having me every time, man.
You got it. Once again, it is TJ Johnson. He is always a great part of what we do right here at the Pop Culture Cosmos.
Oh, here you are. Well, that was pretty good timing. You're here and we're here.
He was just seminal to so many people.
Authentic and kind.
Teach you something and make you feel good.
Something very soothing, something very calming.
Fundamental in developing me into the human being that I am today.
You ask anybody in Canada, they know who he is.
It's hard to imagine anyone having had a bigger influence on my life.
It's the award-winning documentary, Mr. Makeup, The Magic of Make-Believe, available now on Amazon Prime Video. And we're back with the show. It's Gerald Glassford. Thanks so much again for watching this thing. Truly appreciated. It is The Walking Dead, The Ones Who Live. I know that Jeff Sloboda and I earlier this month covered it, but there are absolutely nobody out there that can speak about it better than one of the TWD's biggest fans. That is indeed one of the people behind the great Facebook groups that are out there for The Walking Dead, including the Walking Dead fan base and more. It is, of course, our longtime TWD correspondent, Daphne Matthew. She is the admin of the Walking Dead fan base indeed. Daphne, always good to see you, my friend. Blessings and tidings to you, as always.
Same to you. Thanks for having me back. It's been a while.
It has been a while, just like the show itself. Yes.
Yeah, it's been a while, and a lot of things have happened in the Walking Dead universe. We had a couple of spinoffs, and we finally got The Ones Who Live with Rick and Michonne, and we're gonna talk about that.
Well, I'll start off by saying, no matter what you think of it, no matter what I think of it, no matter any of the hardcore TWD fans, and I've been looking at the sites, I've been looking at the Walking Dead fan base and seeing their response to it. Mm-hmm. No matter what we think, AMC absolutely loves it, because the first episode garnered the highest ratings for a series, I guess, spinoff in 6 years. So, no one's going to argue with the ratings.
It came close to matching the first airing in 2010. I absolutely loved the first episode. I actually loved the entire series. As everybody knows, this was brought about because they had promised back when Andrew Lincoln left the show in mid-season 9 that they were going to give us movies. I don't know. Nobody knows what really happened. But
well, I can tell you what really happened. Ratings tanked, Daphne. That's ratings what happens. Ratings tanked.
And then also, you have to look at it from a consumer point of view. How well, with what happened with the show, like you said, after Carl died and after Andrew Lincoln left and the show tanked, how many fans were actually going to spend money to go to a movie to see a Walking Dead movie?
Well, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt. You had a show that once had its peak, what, 18 million viewers?
Yes.
Been reduced down to 1-3 million viewers, mm-hmm. which, again, that, you know, when it started slide, when the rumors of the movie started to fade away was when, after obviously Negan came as well, the entrance of Negan, a lot of people put that as a turning point as well for the series, but it started to go under 10, started to go under 7, started to go under 5. And people
and then finally we got barely to 3 million. Yes.
Yeah. So that actually changes the scope of how you can go ahead and bring back Rick and Michonne, as opposed to putting up them out there in a $200 million, you know, huge adventure for the
exactly.
movie.
And then the other thing was that there was a lot of issues with Denai's availability to do these movies. She was never going to be in the first movie if it ever happened. That movie was supposed to be all about Rick and the CRM. She was not supposed to be part of the first movie. And then she's a playwright and an actress. And, you know, after she left The Walking Dead, she went back to doing what she did in the past, producing Broadway shows and doing Broadway and screenwriting. So, you know, it took a while to get this off the ground. And when it finally all came together, it was a beautiful story. I absolutely loved it. They actually did clean up some things that happened in TOWL that happened in the comics that didn't happen on the show, such as Rick cutting off his hand. Yes, the hand. That really made a lot of fans happy that they finally addressed that. All in all, it was a great show. It was a great series. It's been labeled as a limited series. And since it ended, I've been going back and forth in the groups about, you know, people wanting more and people wanting, asking if there's going to be a second season. At this time, there's no plans for a second season because of the fact, one, Andrew Lincoln did this as a replacement for the movies because he was contractually obligated for the 3 movies. So when Scott M. Gimple and Andrew Lincoln got together and decided to do the limited series, that was it for him. He is not signing on to do any more Walking Dead shows or committing himself to another full-time show. He may make an appearance in the other spinoffs, but he is not obligated to do any more. Personally, from my personal point of view, T.O., The Ones Who Live, in my opinion, closed the book on the Rick and Michonne story. They got their happy ending. They don't need to go back into the combats and the other groups. I think from my standpoint and a lot of people's standpoints who are diehard fans of The Walking Dead, don't get me wrong, I still love The Walking Dead, but I don't think they need to go past that. He got reunited with his kids. Michonne found him. That should really be the end of it. I mean, I know AMC is very, you know, pretty much like betting on reviving the whole Walking Dead franchise, but I don't think they should go past what they did with TOWL. They had the two other series that did well. Daryl Dixon did well. Dead City did very well. And those actors actually want to continue to do that. But, you know, one of the biggest arguments that have been, arguments that's been online lately is, you know, the love of the fan base and the people like me who love The Walking Dead is, when is it time to close the door on it? These actors have been dedicated to this show in one form or another for 14, 15 years now. And they want to go on to do other things. I mean, I just read recently that Norman Reedus wants to cut his hair because he's doing Boondock Saints.
Boondock Saints, yes.
He doesn't want the long hair anymore. He wants to cut off his hair. How will that impact Daryl Dixon in the future? One, his availability, and two, the fact that he wants to cut his hair off now. That is something we can look at down the line. Right now, we're talking about The Ones Who Live. So let's talk about it. It was only 6 episodes. Very fast-paced. A lot of action. They reunited. My only problem with the show, it was the last episode was very rushed. The way the CRM was taken down was just... It was too easy.
Very good point. Something I would agree with.
It was too easy. And it's like, okay, we all looked at The Walking Dead over the last 14 years off and on. And it seems like in the later seasons that the conflicts with bigger groups, they rushed them. Like, okay, let's talk about, first of all, the first one, the Savior War. In the comics, the Savior War went on for a very long time. And it was pretty much half a season. And then we had the Whisperer War. The Whisperer War was like 30 comics, and they made that into a half a season as well. I just felt that if they wanted to do a second season of The Ones Who Live, where they should have ended it at this season, was just Rick and Michonne escaping the CRM. Jadis left the letter for whoever to find in the event of her death. And it would have been awesome if they left it with just Rick and Michonne escaping the CRM, reuniting with their kids, and somebody from the CRM finding Jadis's letter, and then they went after them, but they didn't do that. Michonne found the letter, destroyed all the evidence of Alexandria and her and Rick's entanglement or relationship, and then they went riding off into the sunset. So that says to me right off the bat that there probably won't be another season, because they kind of like killed the storyline with killing off the CRM that quickly.
Well, I'll just say this. I am very happy that you're happy that about with the season. I mean, I don't share your same praise for the show. I'm not a big fan with it. I thought it was okay. I really didn't think it was great. I thought there were some issues with it, One of which was that the fact that the last episode was rushed, mm-hmm. and that they tried to explain everything away on that helicopter ride with the newsman. The newsman voiceover on that last couple minutes of the actual episode tried to sweep everything neatly under the rug with what he said, tried to tie up all the loose ends within a matter of a 2 minute voiceover. And I think that's very sloppy writing right there. Yeah. The fact that they represented nobody in Alexandria except for the kids right there when Rick and Michonne came back, I thought was a budget cutting at its finest, especially when you had the priest at a previous episode. You can't bring him back for another episode. I guess not.
Yeah.
Not enough money for it. I also thought that the CRM could have been a bigger issue. And like you said, they just finished them off real quick. Now hear me out. And I understand Rick and Michonne want to get TWD in their rearview mirror as fast as possible. I get that. Yeah. But I think if you're AMC, I should have or would have talked them into an Avengers Endgame style ending for all of them, because Dead City and Daryl Dixon only have so much of lifespan. You even said yourself that Daryl Dixon, with the fact that he wants to cut his hair, may only have a certain lifespan in itself. And Dead City, with the fact that one of its characters is approaching his 60s, one of the main characters there. Jeffrey Dean Morgan, how much longer can he actually do it? So my proposal, as I proposed to Jeff Sloboda, was that you get them all together for one last limited series run, and you just ended that there. One big spectacular for ratings, and that's it. But let me finish this. Okay. Let me finish this on the reason why I didn't like it as much, because I thought the story, like you said, was rushed throughout. But also the exposition. I think Leslie Ann Brandt as Pearl did a lot of the heavy lifting and exposition. It was hard for me to comprehend or understand sometimes some of the things that she was trying to correlate, because she was asked to do a lot of the heavy lifting for exposition. And I think she was the wrong character for doing that. I think I like her as a character. I think they gave her a crappy ending. I want to go ahead and say that too, by the way. Yeah. They kind of just, pushed her off to the side. And I thought that was very unwarranted. But they also gave her a lot of the heavy lifting and exposition. And I really thought that was probably not the best choice as well. But my way I will end this up is I really think that they should get them all together for one last 3 to 5 episode run and be done with.
Thanks for checking out the PCC, the Pop Culture Cosmos. We'll be back in one moment. If you're tired of sifting through flea markets for rare and unique games, we can help. Retro City Games in Henderson, Nevada, only 5 minutes from the Las Vegas Strip, has all your favorite gaming staples, classics, and a wide selection of rare games with new stuff always appearing on our shelves. Come in and chat with Nicole or Doug about your love of games and watch as they help you complete your collection or find your childhood favorite. And don't forget, Retro City Games loves trade-ins. So if you have any Nintendo, Super Nintendo, Sega, Xbox, PlayStation, or even PC games, come in and visit Retro City Games today. Welcome to the new metropolis of gaming, Retro City Games.
I agree with you. That's one of the problems I'm having with a lot of groups, because even me being a huge fan of the show and have been since the beginning, is that I'm the one that's saying it's time to close the door on it. I mean, I did like The Ones Who Live, but as you said, I have problems with the last two episodes. I think they rushed it. They rushed to the ending way too quickly. And with that, the storyline suffered because it jumped so much. I would have loved if they had more episodes with Rick and Okafor before they killed him off.
I'm just telling you right now, Okafor should have been the one carrying the exposition. I thought, I'm trying to take nothing away from Leslie Ann Brandt. But again, because she had to speak in that dialect, it's hard for her to get that across, everything that she had to do. I thought the Okafor character would have been really well suited to doing all that heavy lifting. And I also thought the actor who played Okafor did a really good job, but they killed him off. Craig Tate, by the way, Craig Tate did a really good job, and they just knocked him off early. And I thought that was very, that was another wrong move and another reason why I can't rate it as highly as you. But I am so happy that you enjoyed it because you are the one.
Let's take that. I mean, I was excited for it. I liked it. I'm not rating it that high as the show because I saw some of the obvious issues with it. That's one of the debates we've been having for the last 3 weeks is that I saw a lot of the issues. She found Rick in episode two or three. And it, for the next 2.5 episodes, it was pretty much the Rick and Michonne love affair. So I'm like, okay, they got reunited. We didn't have to go through all the love affair stuff. They should have just continued on with the storyline with the conflict within the CRM. By the way, I love Terry O'Quinn.
Yeah, excellent.
I loved him in that role.
CRM could have been much bigger to the Walking Dead universe than what it was made out to be. Much bigger.
Well, see, that's the problem with all of the villains. They made their storylines less relevant than they were in the comics. Look at, if you take a look at it, go all the way back to the governor. The governor was a huge storyline in the comics. He even had his own series of books, comics within the Walking Dead Walking Dead comics. They made him a very small villain. He was defeated easily. Negan, the same thing. Alpha, the same thing. They made, after, I'm going to say, let's say season 5, they kind of like made the villains second rate as far as the storyline goes. They didn't make them as big and as powerful as they were in the comics. They always gave you the impression that Rick's group and Alexandria and the kingdom, they could all overcome everything. And it took a lot away from the story as it should have been told if you read the comics. I've read all the comics. And like I said, after season 8, because it just, it was like they were rushing all the storylines. And like I said, my biggest issue with The Ones Who Live, even though I liked it better than I thought I would.
That's good.
They could have made it more of a better story. I wanted for me to be able to understand more about the CRM and what they were about and what they were doing. We know from the show they were going out and destroying other communities, but why were they doing that? See, there's a lot of unanswered questions. And I guess that's one of the reasons I have that they shouldn't even mess with it anymore because there's nowhere else for that story to go. Dead City has another season. Daryl Dixon, actually, you're not going to see Daryl Dixon that much in this second season because it's subtitled The Book of Carol. Carol is going to try to go find Daryl. So you're going to see more of Carol and less of Daryl in season 2. And I'm going to tell you why. The reason is because season 1 was not that highly rated. A lot of people, and this was all over the boards when it came out, a lot of people didn't understand, first of all, we didn't find out to see episode 4 how he ended up in France, why he ended up in France. So the first 3 seasons made no sense to anybody looking at that show. And then with Dead City, although it was a good storyline, it was very confusing because it took place, I think, what? Herschel is a teenager, not 16. He looks 16, 17. So it's like, let's say 10 years after season 11. a lot of people were dissatisfied with that because they're wondering why after 16 years does Maggie still have this hatred towards Negan, but needs him. And she keeps saying she's going to kill him, but you haven't killed him in 16 years. What's stopping you? You had every opportunity since season 10 when they imprisoned him to kill him. And he still ain't dead.
I know. It keeps on going and going. You know, just can you either kill him off or not kill him off and just decide one way or the other?
Yeah, and it was interesting when Maggie was finally reunited with Herschel, he told her off about that. He was like, you neglected me for so many years because of your desire, passion, or whatever to kill Negan, and you still haven't killed him. So let's go back to the ones who live. Like I said, the show itself was better than a lot of people thought it would be. But I think, like I said, it was too rushed. It would have been amazing if they could have committed to a second season, because a lot of people were like, well, maybe there'll be a second season. No. If there was going to be a second season, they did it with Daryl Dixon even before the first episode premiered. They already said there would be a season two. Or with Dead City, they announced it before the finale. They have no intentions of making a second season because Andrew Lincoln only committed for this.
So what do you think about my proposal? If we're in the AMC offices, you and I go in there, the secretary lets us in, and we go in there in front of all the board members there and give the hard pitch on an Avengers Endgame final six episode arc for
reuniting all three.
Yeah, all three of them. I'm just getting it over with.
I'm down with it. I actually would write them a letter because I don't see, there's only so much you can milk out of a series. I mean, we've seen series on TV. I mean, we're 50s somewhat there, you know, and we've over our lifetime have seen shows go on.
Spinoff after spinoff.
It just didn't work. I mean, and I think, you know what? They did homage to Rick and Michonne with this series. They don't have to go anywhere else. What they need to do is just wrap it up. Wrap up all the shows and call it a day. These actors, and that's a big argument I've been having in the fan base and other sites that I either am a member of or admin, is that these actors want to do other things. They don't want The Walking Dead to be the number one thing on their resume. Stephen Young, he asked to be killed in season 7 when Negan killed him. What has that man done since he left The Walking Dead? He got nominated for Academy Award. He has won an Emmy. He has won a Grammy, not a Grammy. He has won an Emmy. He has won a Golden Globe.
Could you say he's invincible?
Let me tell you something. The Walking Dead was...
No, because his character is invincible. That's the only reason why.
Yeah. He has done some amazing work since leaving The Walking Dead.
He has very much so.
And he's gotten a lot of accolades for his work. He did a show. What was the name of that show?
Well, Beef.
That was awesome.
Yes. Him and Ali Wong. One of the highest rated shows of last year on Netflix.
Yes.
Yeah.
And some people, I mean, I know, you know, we get set in our head that, you know, we love the show. We want it to continue. But it's time to hang it up because there's nothing left for them to cover. I mean, you know what? Here's an idea for AMC. Like I said, they have a lot of spinoff comics. Why not do the backstory of the governor? The governor didn't get a fair shake in The Walking Dead.
I think that would be a hard pitch, personally, just to a general audience. Not TWD hardcores, but to a general audience. I think that's just a hard pitch.
Yeah, and then there was also Tyrese, who had his own backstory. There are a lot of backstories, but you know what? Like you said, it'd probably be a hard pitch to pitch any of these backstories because, to be honest, I think people are just worn out now. It's like, okay, let's move on from this. Okay, we have the end game or the end story for Rick and Michonne. I just think
if you got them together one last time, it makes AMC happy because you got a ratings boost from that, and it makes them happy because they realize after they're done with it, you can make sure you have a final send-off for all of them at the same time so they can be done with it as well.
Yeah, because if it keeps going on too long, it's going to end up with the same fate as Fear the Walking Dead. Terrible show after season 3.
Or, a show finding the cure to end the show might be a way to go ahead and finish the series off as well.
True, but I just think now is the time for them to close the books. You know, like you said, have one final limited series, bring them all back together. It doesn't have to be their facing another group or anything, but just them finding themselves again.
That's why the CRM would have been such a good opponent for that. And I'm very sad that they were just swept under the rug at the end of The Ones Who Live.
Well, I thought that that was going to be the plan because remember they had that other series the limited series with the kids. It was so bad, I can't even remember the name.
I remember The Walking Dead ones with the shorts, The Walking Dead ones with the kids. Yeah, I remember.
And, you know, had it been done better, it would have been a great lead into The Ones Who Live. They lost their focus after season one because what happened was that the CRM was introduced in that series. Remember?
Yeah.
The CRM was first introduced in that series. Now, because that series did so bad, they just like, okay, it's done. That series would have been a great lead into The Ones Who Live because those kids were in that community that the CRM controlled, and they were making them into soldiers. So, and then they were trying to like get close to touching or maybe a cure, but it was like the world beyond. That was it. That would have been a great lead into this this series that just ended. But I don't know. The writers lost their minds and they decided to go into 20 different directions. So they ended it abruptly with no real closure to it. But I just think as of now, they just need to, like you said, get all the three shows, one last hoorah, limited series, and just resolve everything. If you can't find a cure, okay, fine. Let them rebuild their communities. Let them rebuild the kingdom. Let them rebuild Alexandria. No more conflicts. No more bad guys. You know, it's lost its magic. I'm going to say it like that. And The Ones Who Live brought back some of that magic, but then here we go again with the ending. It left you unsatisfied. It's like, okay, he got back home. Okay. It just like, for me, the last two episodes was like, they just said, okay, we just have to end it somehow. How are we going to end it? 4 out of 6 episodes, I liked the first 4 or 5, wasn't too much of a fan of, and 6 I really wasn't a fan of. It was like, wow, they got away that easy? It was too easy. It was like, come on. You killed Terry Quinn. You made him into a walker. You tied him up to a bunch of grenades, and you blew everybody. I couldn't believe it. That was just way too easy.
But it is Daphne Matthew. Please go ahead and support her today as part of the Walking Dead fan base on Facebook. Again, I'm sure there's still going to be a little bit more down the TWD pipeline. And then it'll stay open for years. So when the revival comes back up, you know, at the end of the decade or whenever AMC.
We'll both be in wheelchairs talking about
it. Yeah, so it will be there indeed. But please again, support Daphne Matthew on Facebook at The Walking Dead Fan. So Daphne, always great to have you here and always great for you to be a part of what we do here at the pub.
Culture, cosmos.